We're talking with Susan Demeter about her book, Cosmic Witch. And I'll tell you what I like about the book and our conversation with Susan. On this program, as you know, we're always looking for connections between seemingly unrelated phenomena, UFOs and Bigfoot, for example, ETs and animal mutilations, psychic phenomena, ghosts. I would never have thought about connecting witchcraft to UFOs, but Susan has done it in a convincing way. And coming up, we'll get into some specifics about the tools of the trade, where this story about broomsticks came from, and then we'll open up the phone line, see what questions you have for my guest. We'll be right back with more Coast to Coast AM. Susan, I wanted to return to what you were speaking of before we went to the break, and it's about these archives that you access, which it's the maybe the saddest part of your book, looking back at the things that were done to women deemed to be witches during the Inquisition. It's just horrible.
Yeah, it's shocking, and certainly, you know, by the 21st century standards of what we would consider, you know, torture and murder of people, it was primarily women, but there were also men, even children and animals. And anything that was considered sort of, you know, demonic or having some sort of agency with the demonic beings or Satan or however... In some ways, it was also used as just a tool to sort of rid villages and towns and places of people that would be considered undesirable as well, Jewish people, Muslim people. So it wasn't just witches. But yes, definitely that label was used to sort of brand people in a bad way. And it wasn't just the church either. It was the states, the actual governments that were pursuing this. In my book, I discussed the Hammer of the Witches and how it really was a blueprint for how to, you know, find witches and torture and murder them. Parts of the church at the time were shocked by it. Like they you know, they really didn't want anything to do with it. So it wasn't all of the church, and it wasn't just people that you might normally associate with a witch. It was anybody who was marginalized or undesired or, you know, it is a sad point, but it had to be made because even though witchcraft as we know it today is very modern, you know, it was born in the last century. You have to sort of to understand the witch archetype and what it is that we're representing, you have to know that past. So I do dedicate a chapter, and I talk about some historical witches as well that are perhaps lesser known, like some of the witches, you know, your listeners may be familiar with Salem and the Salem witch trials, but there are ones here in Europe that were lesser known than I thought because I live here now, that, you know, it would be interesting for, you know, the readers to get a taste of a different story or different people and what they went through.
The name Aleister Crowley comes up. You write about him in the book, and, you know, you never know quite. He's got a PR problem himself over the years. He was into some pretty dark stuff by most accounts. I don't know that it constitutes evil, but he dredged up an entity that sure looks a heck of a lot like a big-headed alien along the way.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, like I discuss Crowley. I touch a little bit on Jack Parsons. And other people that sort of were into the idea of conjuring these otherworldlies. And yeah, the lamb, when I was a child, I didn't think, I had no concept of what a lamb could be or Aleister Crowley or any of those things. But as an adult, looking back on those little beings, well, I mean, they could have been, you know, exactly what he conjured up.
Have you ever run into another witch who you got a really bad vibe from or who did something underhanded or evil?
Yeah, sure. I mean, it's like I said, like we're all like witches are human beings. Right. Therefore, like we're just as complex as the next person. And therefore, yeah, like I've met all sorts of people. I've met people that I don't necessarily care for in the UFO world. But,
can I get an amen?
Yeah. Considered underhanded or not nice people. So it's the same thing.
The reason I was asking about the wolf in particular is the Skinwalker connection. So, you know, Skinwalker Ranch and the stories in that era, that arena of sorcerers, shamanic sorcerers, shape-shifting into wolves. Skinwalkers have to, in order to do that, they have to do something really bad to have that power, according to indigenous lore.
In the European lore, it's different. They would take on the mantle of this, but the problem is, and I've done a lot of reading about sort of shamanic work in South America, where the shaman would sort of channel the jaguar. Okay.
Right.
And this is a powerful animal. And if you don't reorient yourself or ground yourself here, and you just take on this powerful animal, you can start taking on its more dangerous aspects, okay? And then you can have, in effect, a dangerous human being because you're not letting go. It's the same with the wolf. The wolf is a powerful animal. You know, the wolf is a beautiful animal, but it's also powerful, and you want to give it a healthy respect. You know, it's the same with a jaguar in that. So I don't know if necessarily you have to do something really bad, but if a shaman is channeling that sort of energy and taking on the traits of this apex predator, then they have to be able to let it go at some point, or, like I said, they themselves could become a danger, if that makes sense.
Sure. I want to talk about the tools of the trade, then we'll take a call. You have a pretty extensive section, things that I had never read before. It's a great resource. I enjoyed the book. You know, the perception of Eye of Newt, you know, I didn't see that on the list. That's, you know, sort of a modern perception of, I don't exactly know what a newt is, but I guess it's a little amphibian. But, you know, the image of a cauldron of bubbling parts of maybe body parts from children lured to the gingerbread house. That's all part of the lore. It gets mixed in, but you do have a list of tools that come in handy, and I'm assuming you use some of them yourself.
Oh, some of them, absolutely, I do, depending upon what I'm going to be doing. But as I sort of say at the end of that chapter, the most important tool really is the witch herself or himself, as to what they're going to be doing. So these tools are, I look at it like theater. So whatever works for me in ritual and as a tool to sort of shut off that left brain, okay, and allow the right brain to sort of create with whatever is out there, the spirits that I'm working with or the cosmos, that is the tools that, you know, the calling, whatever the witch sort of feels works for her the best. So this is something that you would want to play around with. And if you're drawn to something, like if you're drawn to tarot or if you're drawn to crystals or any other type of magical tool, you know, that's something that a person can explore for themselves. And if they feel that they're getting results, because I feel, you know, I'm a results-oriented person, then that's the tool they should go with.
Astrology was something that grabbed you as a youngster, right? Instead of astronomy, you floated toward astrology.
I did. And, you know, and it's funny because I'm married to an astrophysicist. So, and he is encouraging and supportive of my interests in astrology and the cosmos. And of course, when I'm doing my own magical workings, I often... I identify as a cosmic witch. I will use celestial sort of happenings to sort of boost what I'm trying to do. You know, whether it's a planetary alignment. Soon we're coming up to this Jupiter Saturn super alignment. I will use those energies to sort of boost my own magical workings. Yeah.
I was interested to see that brooms had a place in the chapter about the tools of the trade. You know, the legend about witches flying on brooms is not what you mean. Explain how brooms fit into this.
Okay, well, I mean, the brooms, as far as like the popular culture goes, sort of the witch flying on her broomstick, that really sort of appears around the, I think, 15th or 16th century. So in the Middle Ages there, So you'll see witches and they're riding their broomsticks. And obviously there is some sexual connotation to that. And the idea that these women are sexually depraved and they're spiritually depraved because they're using these broomsticks to fly off to go and, you know, party with the devil, so to speak. I do have a broom that I made. I'm very proud of it because I made it myself here in Italy. And so I've made this broomstick and I've decorated it, and I use it as a form of protection, and I use it also to sweep out my house because I have a couple of ghosts here. So occasionally, any kind of negative energy, I sweep out of the villa. So I use my broom in that sense
sort of like burning a smudge.
Only think of it as sort of sweeping. So I sweep out anything that's sort of negative or I don't like. I just sort of sweep it out, and out the door it goes.
Yeah, the symbolism works. We'll take a couple of calls, and then we'll come back to the tools of the trade. East of the Rockies, Doug in New Jersey. Hi, Doug.
Good evening. How are you this morning?
All right. What's on your mind?
Yes, I wanted to call up and ask, during the Salem witch trials, there was a lot of people going back now that they're studying back on it. They believe that there was an infestation of a mold called ergot that they believe got into the wheat, and then it was later cooked and used for bread and whatnot, which is basically a hallucinogenic, sort of like LSD. And they said that maybe some of these people had hallucinated some of these people doing things and later on recalled them as witches. And other things were like someone would be accused of being a witch, and they would go ahead and do things like pile stones on them or hold their feet to the fire. So they would either admit that they were a witch, or if they didn't admit, they would wind up dying or burning or being crushed by these stones. They would say, yes, they died, but they weren't a witch. If they were a witch, they would have admitted it. So it's really a catch-22 when it comes down to trying to get someone to admit they're a witch. And I want to know what your thoughts were about the ergot. And I'll take
one. The ergot, yes. It's also something that has been used as a potential explanation here in Europe and in France. Hallucinogens are used as well, like especially DMT, it's now called like a potential spirit molecule, to sort of put a person in a mindset that perhaps they can explore, like a psychonaut, these types of strange experiences. So yes, there is that explanation of ergot being sort of creating these hallucinations. But I would also suggest that perhaps they were a complex hallucination and they were just a little bit more than some, you know, getting high. There's something more to it. Because I know that there are shamanic people that do use, like, DMT and that to sort of reach that state where they can be in trance and they can do their shamanic work, and they are literally, they are having what I would consider a paranormal experience more than just, you know, that being, you know, feeling a bit tipsy or stoned or whatever.
So substances that are a source of power, like I'm thinking of Carlos Castaneda and Don Juan,
yes,
whether it's true or not, but I mean the Bruja using plants that give him power.
Yes, and I mean I've known witches who have actually gone on these sort of shamanic experiences using that type of a tool and they have reported feeling that they have communed with the spirit of the plant itself. There is that to be said about the ergot as well.
Joe in Monterey. Good morning, Joe, on the Wild Card Line. What's on your mind?
Thank you, Mr. Knapp. This is a really good show. You have some really good shows this weekend.
Thank you.
I don't call myself a magician, although as a healer, we do all the different things that may be considered magic. But there was one thing that I want to ask if you have ever done, because I used to do this. It was really fun. Manifesting a synchronicity event.
Mm-hmm.
Like if you have a few people, you say that such and such is going to happen, maybe three different things, and you go out to dinner or whatever, and those things will happen.
Yes.
Okay.
Synchronicity to me is magic. And I have actually created, as far as like my own work and life, I have created maps of synchronicities, which when you start really digging at them, they become really, really intriguing on a personal level, how all these little connections fit together to create this reality that we're living in. I'm a big believer in synchronicity, and I feel that we can create our own synchronicities. That'll probably be a part of the focus of my second book, which will be like a Cosmic Witch Volume 2.
Thanks, Joe. I think, as I said at the beginning of this hour, what interested me about the book, in addition to all the stuff that I did not know about witchcraft, it's a great reference book, but your approach to it is one that we've often explored here on the program, is trying to connect or look for connections between seemingly unrelated phenomena. And you have a very broad definition of what fits into your arena, which I appreciate. Things that may or may not be the same phenomena, just appearing to us in different forms.
Mm-hmm.
You see connections, though.
I do see connections. I saw connections very early on when I sort of, after my first UFO experience, I got very much involved in sort of UFO research in the UFO world, but I also got involved in the parapsychological world. I guess because one of the first books I sort of read on UFOs was Flying Saucers by Jung, and I was a huge fan early on of Jacques Vallée. Okay, so I was looking at folklore, and so it brought me to the realm of parapsychology. And I wrote a chapter for Robbie Graham's book, UFO Reframing the Debate, exploring UFOs as a parapsychologist. So using that sort of tool, which it hasn't really been done that often. I think maybe Scott Rogo did it, a couple of other people. But I started seeing the connections between these various phenomena. And then on top of that, at least here in Europe, many of these places that were associated with witches years ago, and where there would be like these pagan pilgrimages to these places to go seek guidance from a sibyl deep in the cave, these are now modern areas of UFOs. So, I mean, like where people are actually reporting what they perceive as a spaceship, you know? So there's all these hot spots where you have this sort of mixed bag of phenomena that, depending upon who you are and what your beliefs are, you're going to label in a different way. You know?
I was talking about the list of tools that you mentioned. You have books as a list of tools, and that's not a tool that most people would associate with witchcraft. But do you have a library of books that from which you learn ancient secrets?
Yes, I do. I have, in Cosmic Witch, there's a rather eclectic bibliography of books people can use to explore the topic of witches. So my bookshelves are sort of, because I share them with with my husband, they're a mix of sort of consciousness and astrophysics and witchcraft and magic and high magic and ceremonial magic and flying saucers and psychology and lots of parapsychology and ghost books too. So it's like this, just like a smorgasbord of information that I'm sort of pooling all these different little connections from.
I can relate to that. We're talking with Susan Demeter about her book, Cosmic Witch, Magic, Witchcraft, and the Supernatural. We're going to take a break here and then come back and take some calls. We're talking with Susan Demeter, the Cosmic Witch, about the tools of the trade and anything else you have on your mind. One more segment to go. If you're going to call and have a question about witchcraft, now's the time to do it. We'll be right back. Susan, the phones are pretty full, so I'm going to ask you about a couple of tools, and then we'll take some calls. Wands. You list wands, and I think of Harry Potter, its magical abilities, but witches really do use wands?
Some do, and I personally love them. I tend to make them out of things I find myself in nature, because it brings me closer to the nature that I feel fuels my magic. So yes, wands are a tool, and I have a beautiful wand that was made for me by a magician in England that I treasure very much. So it really, again, it depends. These tools all depends on the witch. And what they feel they can utilize to sort of fuel their own magic.
What I didn't see on the list was the term is familiar. So animals being, is there some mm-hmm. kind of connection there?
Yes. I personally have two, but my one cat I call Pixie. I also call her my little demon. She's my demon. familiars. These can be animals. They don't have to always be animals, but the topic of familiars could be like a full chapter on it on its own. But
well,
yeah,
my home is
a spirit that they would call the familiar. Mm-hmm.
My home is infested with demons, feline demons. Yeah, there are a couple of them listening right now. We'll take some calls
awesome,
first.
Because I love cat people, so.
I had that feeling. First-time caller, Kathleen in Houston. Good morning, Kathleen.
Yes, my grandparents came from Siebenburg, Transylvania, back in the 1800s, and my great-aunt was a practicing witch.
Mm-hmm.
And she very much was a believer in werewolves.
Yes.
And I was just wondering what you might. This was in, my grandmother was born in 1889, so this would have been before that time.
Mm-hmm.
So that's before they were in movies, you know, werewolves.
Well, yeah, this was a popular topic in Europe. And in fact, this is something that might interest you as well, George. There is a castle here in Austria. It's called Moosham Castle. And it was the scene in the, I think, the late 18th century of witch trials. So this is actually quite late for witch trials. But what's interesting about it is that there were werewolves that were associated with these witches. And there were cattle mutilations. There was mutilations of domestic animals that is very similar to what you see at Skinwalker and more modern sort of UFO sites where these cattle are dismembered and drained of blood. And so this was blamed on these werewolves that were associated to the witches, so these, again, shamanic werewolf witches in Austria. And that was, you know, maybe 100 years before Kathleen's grandmother in Transylvania, but it was there. So they were describing these things.
So, Kathleen, did she share this information with you? Are you still there?
Yes, I'm still here.
So she openly told you about this?
My grandmother did.
Yeah.
My grandmother, who was born in 1889, and she would tell me all about the werewolves and, oh, there was something else, too, that was. But she did say that her aunt was a practicing witch, and they did believe in werewolves.
Mm-hmm.
Well, thanks for sharing that with us, and welcome. Yeah. Your first time calling into Coast. I hope you'll stick around. Thank you. We're going to another caller from Texas, Tim in Dallas. Hi, Tim.
George, how are you doing today?
All right. What's on your mind?
Hey, I just wanted to kind of bring some togetherness with witchcraft and science, actually, and kind of get your and Susan's thoughts on this.
Okay.
Okay. I think that it actually, as far as a spiritual path or a lifestyle, witchcraft works because it's nature-based. So it absolutely works with science. It's not against science because we accept the natural and physical environment. So I think that it actually works really well. And the idea of magic as well for those witches who participate in magic. Magic itself is, I think, something that eventually could potentially be explained maybe through quantum physics. I don't know. I'm not a physicist, but I think that all of these things can work in tandem and harmony with science. Yes.
And Susan mentioned earlier, Tim, that there are measurable effects that she qualifies as magic, psi effects that are measurable by people like Dean Wrighton, mm-hmm. who studied it for a long time. Thanks for the call. We're going to the wild card line, Jonathan in Hackensack, New Jersey. Hi, Jonathan.
Hi, George. Hi, Susan. Great conversation you guys are having. You just mentioned something really important, and I think about it all the time. If we don't see something happening, this is in regards to, like, magic, quote-unquote, hocus-pocus, what people say, you know. We need to stop getting caught up in this idea of fake and real, as if those are the only two options. If mm-hmm. we have an outcome, something happens, and I think people who are into witchcraft accept these ideas and don't question them. They work, and we don't need all the answers, because science isn't the answer. Science operates in a observation, experiment, theory kind of setup in a laboratory. As human beings, we work on instinct. Can you imagine if we had to run to a laboratory to figure out all of our problems? That's why it doesn't work for us. And science will not save the day. You know, love will save the day, as cliche as it sounds, because it is the strongest emotion, and we can't see it, but we feel it and experience, and there's no question about it. But I think there's a love element in the witchcraft thing, and a lot of these people who are, I think, somewhat they're wrongly described and you know, portrayed in Hollywood as something other than what they are. But you guys are talking about the Skinwalker Ranch, which is, to me, the most fascinating subject anyone could talk about. Here's a place where you can experience, experience this, you know, what we would see in Hollywood to some degree, you know. And people really don't want to know. You know, people are lazy. They don't want to know. The UFO thing, I just accept it as something that naturally happens. To me, they're lights in the skies, and it's a personal experience. The act of telling someone your story and expecting them to do anything other than smile and say thank you is where we go off in the wrong direction. But I guess, you know.
I agree with you 100%, particularly on, like, just being able to allow people to express themselves as they need to, as opposed to trying to force. This is coming as not necessarily as a witch, but as someone who spent a lot of time researching and speaking with witnesses, boots on the ground, so to speak, with UFO people and ghost people and that. I think we just need to let people express themselves. And sometimes that's all people need. And that, to me, is enough. I'm going to borrow a little bit from my friend Greg Bishop and say sometimes all we should do is just give some art tools, give a sketch pad, and let the witness express themselves. And maybe there's more in that than we could ever do with measuring this or, you know, deciding what shape is that. And you know what I'm saying? Like, I totally agree with you, and I love the love part, because love is a very strong emotion. Every magical act I've done that has exceeded my expectations was driven by love.
Thanks for the call, Jonathan. I would say I tend to agree with you about Skinwalker Ranch, that area of the Uinta Basin. You know, different phenomena manifest themselves to different people in different ways, and it is a very personal experience. And whatever happens in that area, it's only the only witnesses are those who are allowed to see something. This whatever it is, it's there. It unveils itself, peels back layers of the onion at different times, and it kind of sizes you up. So it really is a very personal experience. We're going to go to Jay in Missouri. Good morning, Jay. Jay, are you there? All right, we're moving on to West of the Rockies, Michael in Portland, Oregon. Good morning, Michael.
Hey, great show. I have a lot of questions, but I guess I got to cut it down. I was wondering, is it okay? I saw a documentary, but it was is it okay to say the documentary I saw? It was Out of the Shadows. Have you seen that one?
I haven't, but have you, Susan? You're familiar with it?
No, I haven't.
Well, you know, it's really, they say, you know, they get in there, they're talking, you know, I guess we talk about the Hollywood, and I guess they use the holly tree to make wands, and it gets into the CIA being in Hollywood, and we get to the psychological warfare using movies, but I was wondering if, like Black Sabbath song, and they did a song, like, which is that Black Masses, And I was wondering if you thought that people in our government might be trying to cast spells on the public.
Well, I wouldn't be surprised. I think that every ruler, and I'm pretty sure I touched a little bit about this in my book, every king, queen, you know, government head has all had some sort of magical person around them. Even Ronald Reagan had his own personal astrologer, so, and psychics. So, sure, I wouldn't be surprised.
It makes you wonder if they've ever tried to harness something like that. And it also makes you wonder if, you know, the planet's messed up. It's a really weird time.
Well, you look at all these sort of like programs that the U.S. military and DARPA and all that have conducted in psychic research and with remote viewing and all that. And as I had said before, remote viewing to me is just, you know, reframing it in which vernacular is the same thing, you know. It's tools to gain non-local information.
So I was trying to delve deeper into it earlier in our conversation, Susan, about how far this goes, how powerful this can be. Is there a force that could have planetary effects using some of the techniques you're talking about?
Yes, I think so, especially if you have a large group of people. I have a theory that it's one of the reasons that we haven't nuked ourselves yet is because growing up as a young woman in the 1980s, we were bombarded with these films about nuclear war and nuclear holocaust and this and that, and it scared the crap out of us. And so if you have a collective group of people all thinking, I really want nothing to do with nuclear war, well, maybe that's the reason in part why we haven't nuked ourselves, because I do believe in a greater collective human unconscious that is sort of governing some of our reality.
We'll try to get one more call in. Steve in Phoenix. Good morning, Steve.
Yeah, what a great topic. I had a question regarding what you thought of the Phoenix Lights. I thought that's something kind of personal to me, and it ties in with it happened on my mom's. My mom died when I was a kid, and her birthday is the day that it happened. And
wow.
And another strange thing, not the same, I mean, on the same day, not the same year, obviously, but and then another strange synchronistic thing was when I about this was the same year that I met my wife, and her birthday is the day my mom died. So my mom's birthday was the day of the Phoenix Lights, and I met my wife almost the same day of the Phoenix Lights. But and then her, I find out later that her birthday was on the day my mom died. So it's just kind of a strange thing. I thought.
Are you familiar with the work of Kenneth Ring?
No.
There's a book called The Omega Project. You might be very interested in that because you're a UFO experiencer and you have had these synchronicities around UFO experience and death. I would highly recommend the work of Kenneth Ring. You'd probably find that really, really interesting. It's called The Omega Project, and it's one of the books that sort of inspired my way of thinking towards UFOs as well. And it's basically, it correlates near-death and death experiences and UFOs. And I also find this with witches, too, who were going on these death processionals with spirits in the Middle Ages, and there would be lights in the sky. So it all sort of these little connections, right?
Thanks, Steve. Appreciate it. Yeah, you're a person, Susan, who looks for connections between
yes.
synchronicities, yes. coincidences. Let mm-hmm. me ask you this. You had mentioned about earlier in our conversation about the reaction to the book. What kind of reaction are you getting? Who's buying it?
I don't know. It's kind of funny because my publisher is actually is far better known for chess. L'Editori publishes a lot of well-known chess publications and is really well-known in Russia. But they have a small sort of esoteric section of books that they publish as well. And he was so enthusiastic about Cosmic Witch. So I'm not really sure. I would have to speak with my publisher, but I've been getting a lot of good feedback, like on Amazon and through people I know in the UFO community, and as well in the pagan community, that are saying this is really interesting. You know, it's different. It's definitely not what you would consider mainstream for the fringe. And so I'm just happy that people are finding it useful. I feel a lot of gratitude when, you know, people tell me that they've taken the time to read my book and appreciate my thoughts, because I've put a lot of my heart. It's a lot of it, as you know, is personal stories as well mixed in with this information that is very meaningful to me.
Oh, absolutely. That comes through. I imagine people buy it because they're interested in how to get started. They've always had a curiosity about it, and they want to give it a try. And you have there's a lot of practical information for people who want to pursue this and give it a go.
Yeah,
Susan,
no,
I appreciate
it's good. It's good on different levels. And I would say it would work for somebody absolutely who is just curious as to the world of paganism and witchcraft. And I give a lot of resources as well throughout that people can explore and sort of find a path for themselves.
Susan Demeter, I enjoyed the book. I enjoyed our conversation. I hope we get a chance to do it again. It's called Cosmic Witch, Magic, Witchcraft, and the Supernatural. It's a great reference book and a lot of info packed in there. Thank you.
Thank you so much. I really enjoyed this as well. Thank you.
Talk to you again. And thanks also to my earlier guest, Ernest Cline. His book, Ready Player 2, is out soon. To my colleagues there at Coast, Michael Cosio and Donna Walker, our webmaster tonight, Greg Bishop, Dan Galante, Chris Boros. Happy Thanksgiving, everyone. Be careful. Be smart. I'll talk to you in a couple of weeks. Good night.